Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Airgun Podcast. It's good to be back in the studio, and by that I mean I'm in a crawl space in a basement. But, man, I cannot complain. And I am excited for this episode where we're joined with Dana Webb from Mountain Sport Airguns. The dude's a legend. It's been really cool to get to know him over the past several months. Just a good dude in a very unique perspective in the airgun industry, just because of his experience, which you guys will hear about in this episode. And if you haven't checked out his channel, Mountain Sport Airguns, make sure you do that. He's got some really cool stuff coming. And if you're new to his channel or you haven't heard of it or seen it before, just think airguns meets camping. And that is my wife, hopefully not peeing, but it could be. She's pregnant, so at this point, she really could just sound like a fire hose for a quick second. You know, because like a fetus is pushing on her bladder. But on a different note, this is going to be a good episode. And also, on that note of my wife peeing and that kind of stuff, I want to know, you guys can message me on Instagram, do you like to hear the real raw footage? And do you guys have any interest in bloopers and outtakes and just failed intros and stuff like that? Because if you do, I got a lot of content for you. So let me know in the comments or in my DMs on Instagram at the Airgun Podcast. And otherwise, enjoy this episode and thanks so much for listening. You guys are the best. Dana Webb, welcome to the Airgun Podcast, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you. I know we had a little conversation yesterday.
Yeah, man, it was good to get to hear your story, and I'm excited for people to hear about it today on the podcast. So just to give yourself a little introduction, why don't you tell people, you probably best describe your role in the airgun industry, but obviously you have a badass YouTube channel, so why don't you give us a little intro of yourself, Dana?
Well, I have been around the industry for a long time, professionally, probably for about 5 years now. But I've been interested in airguns since, you know, I was about 5 or 6 years old. And when I was about 15, 16 years old, I got really, you know, heavy into using them for hunting. I grew up on a ranch, and so I had access to a lot of land to be able to hunt small game, and it's always kind of been, you know, air guns, you know, my tool for hunting. And obviously with PCPs, you know, I got involved with that about 10 years ago and really haven't gone back since. I mean, I've been pretty active in the community. I started my YouTube channel about 5 or 6 years ago and have been doing it professionally for about 2 years.
Right. So when people ask, what do you do? Like if you meet a stranger, what do you tell them? They say, what do you do for work?
I tell them that I'm a videographer. I don't usually go into, you know, specifics. You know, I'm in California, so you don't meet a lot of people that hunt.
Right.
And so I kind of leave that part of it out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I get asked to do, you know, other projects, you know, away from air guns. And with my current channel, you know, as you guys know, I do a lot of camping and a lot of hiking. So I enjoy reviewing other products, you know, besides air guns, you know, such as tents and knives and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's really cool. And that's one of the things I was telling you yesterday that I really like about your channel is that it's not just air guns, and it isn't also just like kill shots. You have like a story that goes along to your videos, and There's something to follow with every video that you watch, and it's refreshing. Of course, you know, scope camera kills and stuff like that is awesome, and we
Yeah,
love that kind of thing, but
that was something that I really kind of had to experiment with. And, I made a lot of mistakes, starting out my channel. It was all about the kills, and it was just like a music videos of death is what I call it. And so I've since then kind of tried to move away from that and really kind of make people feel like they're with me and show some of the other parts about being out in the field, camping, setting up tents, cooking, and really kind of moving away from just making it all about the hunting.
Right. Yeah, and I think, like, you know, you and I were talking yesterday, and it's a good thing, I think, to have your videos formatted in such a way that it's like bringing your audience with you and making them feel like they're there. Whether that's a certain camera angle or the way you tell the story or whatever it is. And I know there are a lot of people on YouTube that who watch the videos, I should say, and they're like, quit talking, just do more shooting. And you're like, all right, Steve.
Yeah, I think we all get people like that. I mean, I've learned you can't please everybody, but at the same time, you have to be yourself. You have to find your own way of filming things, and you just have to recognize that you're not going to please everybody.
Right, that's really good advice. And before we get too much further into this, how did you get involved with PCPs? Like, what was your first experience getting into that? Because I think people would like to hear that. You don't have to go into all the detail, but.
I went out and I bought a Benjamin Marauder. I'd heard a lot about the Marauder. I'd seen a lot of posts about him on the forums, and I decided to buy one. And I bought, a hand pump to go along with it, and I loved it. I immediately just fell in love with it. I didn't mind using a hand pump and found that that worked for me for a long time. And I'd found that, using a PCP, I was able to kind of extend my ranges, and it seemed as though it had a little more power. And the overall shooting experience was better.
Right. And so what did you move to after the Marauder? Or like what was the process to like move into your next PCP?
Well, I got involved with a few guys from the forums, and we ended up meeting up, to do some hunting together. And I was introduced to Tom Costin, who owns American Air Arms, and we became like really close friends, like almost right away. Had a lot in common. We live fairly close, and he at that time was just starting to develop some of his guns, for sale. And so he had asked me to help him with the manufacturing process, and he ended up giving me an Eagle that was one of the first prototypes. And along that road, I really just started getting involved more of the manufacturing. I started meeting more people and really getting more interested in how they worked. And the next thing I knew, I was starting to do reviews, and I was starting to get approached by other companies, to help them with, either manufacturing or just as a consultant, out in the field, maybe to give them some ideas on how they could better improve their product. And so
And
that's
then,
kind of, how I started doing this.
right. Well, you've seemed to kind of found your style for filming and your video production, which is really cool. And you do great reviews, and like you and I were talking, you mentioned that you have a certain style of doing things that allows you to actually say your honest opinion about the gun, or at least the experience you had with the product. And I think that's really beneficial for the audience. It might make your job harder, but I think people watching the videos or who are interested in that gun, getting that honest review is really important for them because it gives them something to consider, whether it was like this gun shot great, but this happened to it, or I wasn't super pleased with this feature, or this feature could be improved here, or whatever it is. I think that's a really good way, but you were kind of mentioning how it's tricky
It is very
to.
tricky, and I don't care how nice of a gun you have, anything is going to have a shortcoming, and what works fantastic for me might not be great for somebody else. And
Yeah, and that.
it's hard to word it in a way to you don't want to sound like you're bashing something on in a video, because let's be honest here. I mean, companies, manufacturers, chances are they're not going to want to continue to work with somebody that just bashes their product. And so I see a lot of people that do reviews, they may be afraid to let loose a little and give some feedback that might not be what the manufacturer wants to hear, but it's something that's going to help them, and it's something that's going to help the consumer when they go to purchase something.
Right. What would you say has been your overall experience with seeing kind of some like airgun reviews and getting to experience like that whole thing, being like a consumer and watching people do reviews and watching hunting videos to now doing them yourself? Do you think it's everything that you had the idea that it would be?
No, it's not. It's a lot more work than I ever had imagined it would be. And it doesn't have to be that much work, but I've learned to be very particular about the way I film stuff. And it's been a trial and error for me. I've made a lot of mistakes. Like I said, I'm a very private person, and I don't like being on camera. I can't stand the sound of my own voice. And so it wasn't easy for me to get out and put myself out, for people to be able to watch.
Right. And as far as the reviewing of things and the kind of the, I guess, the politics of the whole thing, do you have a different
I
perspective?
see a lot of reviewers, that do reviews, and everything is just the greatest thing ever, and nothing, is ever bad with the guns. And I look at it more as, an entertainment factor rather than something that I would seriously look at to purchase, make a purchase.
Right.
And so I think there's a big difference between the two. I think there's people you watch, for entertainment, and you take a little bit out of it and leave the rest. And then there's other guys that, are brutally honest. And I don't see a lot of that in the airgun industry. I see a lot of it in other genres like gear review. You see a lot of that in camping type stuff. And so I've tried to watch a lot of those kind of channels and really kind of get ideas on how I could bring things into a way that's not harmful to anybody, but at the same time, it's going to let them see a product for what it is.
Right. Yeah, and that has to be super challenging to word something in a way that is helpful and useful, but it is not necessarily offensive or, yeah, it's a tricky thing. But aside from all the trickiness and kind of letting people understand who want to pursue this kind of thing, like pursuing reviews and working with companies and doing the stuff that they see their favorite YouTubers doing, like watching your channel, is I think just the video quality is one of my favorite things about your channel. Like I mentioned, the story is really good, but do you have a drone, Dana? Is that how you get all that cool like aerial footage?
Oh, I've got a friend of mine that I grew up with, and we're very close friends. And him and his brother-in-law have a drone company, and they do a lot of cinematic drone stuff, for the movies, and they do a lot of car commercials, and they're into air guns, and so periodically they come out and they film stuff for me. They've got, a big, $60,000 drone that they bring with them and run.
Jeez.
And so every couple of months they'll come out and they'll film things for me that I'm able to use in my videos.
Well, that's a good resource.
It's an excellent resource for me. I thought about getting a drone, but it's a lot of work to self-film. And a lot of those areas that I go to are very, they're difficult to get to. And so that's ended, I ended up doing a lot of it myself because I can't get anybody to go with me.
Right.
And so having a drone is just one extra thing that, to be honest, I don't want to deal with.
Yeah, no, that's fair, 'cause you're with your style of how you go out, I mean, you're out in the field and you're camping, like you're set up. It's not like some channels, which there's nothing wrong with this, but a lot of channels, they drive out to a spot, hop out of the truck, shoot, or drive to a dairy farmer, wherever, and they, just do some pest control and that kind of thing. But that's one of the things I like about your channel, is the camping and just the outdoors aspect of it, like really getting out there and getting involved with nature. And I know I that's what kind of got me hooked, which kind of leads me to my next question. Like, what is it about air guns that got you hooked to use them primarily over firearms for your channel? And I don't know, maybe in just overall.
I shot air guns for, since I was about 6 years old. I got into firearms pretty heavily. And being in California, I just got sick of all the regulations and the laws, and to be honest, I don't like the noise.
Right.
I like being able to go out and be quiet and not have to wear hearing protection, not have to worry about using non-lead. And I just get a much more enjoyable experience hunting with an air gun. And
Right.
it asks that question a lot, and people always ask me, why don't you use, a firearm to hunt with? And it basically comes down to it. I mean, there's people that enjoy using, they like bow hunting, they like using a black powder gun. People, use spears, they blow guns. I mean, you name it. I just prefer using an air gun.
Right. Yeah, and that's it. Sometimes I think people expect a very like well thought out or specific answer, And a lot of times people don't necessarily have one, you know, or like, it's like asking someone like, why do you do your hair the way you do it? Like, what was it that made you have this certain hairstyle? And it's like, I don't know, like it. That's it.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay.
Yeah, it is. It's okay. And there doesn't have to be any complicated answer to it. I mean, if you enjoy it and it works for you, you know, I get a lot of people that look at, you know, what it costs to get involved in, you know, getting a higher end setup, and they're turned off by it. And it's the same thing. You know, people go out and they spend thousands of dollars on a compound bow. I see it no differently. I have no issue with, you know, using higher end stuff because I'm into it. It's not going to sit in the closet. I use it. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I that's one of the things that kind of gets to me a little bit is when people bring up the cost of air guns. Like, yeah, if you're not, I mean, if your perspective is coming from the outside, you don't really know much about it. And then you're like, what? This gun is $1,000 and I have to buy a $600 air tank and all this stuff. And then I have to put a scope on it. But then, like you said, they have this other hobby where it's like, okay, you're hunting, just your clothes that you wear alone and your backpack is like $900.
Yeah.
Well, that's just clothes.
It's a big commitment and it's not for everybody.
Right. That's fair. And I think the same goes really with any hunting method. Like, I love watching Tim Wells hunt with like the blowgun, which I have, and I've taken some squirrels and rabbits with it and like doing spear hunting and that kind of thing. And I might enjoy it, but I might not, you know, like it looks, I think just by knowing myself and knowing the kind of things I like, that's something I would enjoy doing. But getting someone like who's totally new to the idea to do it, like it's probably, you know, hit or miss with them being like, I'm going to do this again. Like it could just be like, oh, cool experience, or wasn't a good experience and I won't do it again. But I think it's important for people to remember, like,
yeah. And you know,
you can do it every
once. You got to try stuff. You know, if I always tell people, you know, if you've got friends that, you know, have some higher end stuff, or, you know, you want to get into PCPs, you know, get out there and, you know, try to get your hands on one just to try it, to see if you like it. You can start out with, you know, something a little cheaper. And mm-hmm. if you like it, you could upgrade, or, you know, stay where you are, or turn around and sell it.
Right. It's a lot less daunting when you realize that you can sell things. And if you can, just like you said, and this is what a lot of people have told me on the podcast, is their advice for people looking to get into the sport is try and get involved with a community, whether that's through a friend or, you know, a Facebook group or something that has some air guns, and get some time behind them. So that way you can figure out, this is something I want to invest in, if the money is
the kind of the thing that's holding you back. A fantastic resource. I mean, you're able to meet people, talk to people, find people that are, you know, within your own community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I did. I spent a lot of time on the Gateway to Air Guns Forum, a lot of time on Air Gun Nation, and I met a lot of really cool people, and I met a few that were local. You know, I hooked up with them,
mm-hmm.
and we're close friends.
Yeah, and that's a very similar thing that happened with me, is once I started the Instagram for the Airgun Podcast and people started following along, I started developing kind of, it sounds funny, but I started developing online relationships with people, and then some of them were local, and then we did end up meeting up, and there's some of the people I still go shooting with as often as I can. So I'll see them, you know, it's been crazy with COVID lately, but try to see them, you know, once a month is what we were doing. So It's a cool community to be a part
It
of, and
really
once you
is.
get people who bring you in, it's cool because they usually have cooler stuff than you do just starting out, and then you're like, okay, I need to get this thing next, or I know I won't be able to get this thing for a while, so I'm going to shoot my friends until I can get mine, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's it's nice. I ended up moving a couple years ago, and we ended up buying a house that's about 2 or 3 minutes away from a close friend of mine that I hunt with, and so it's nice. We carpool, and we're able to get out a lot more often, and that's all thanks to being on the forums and getting to meet people.
Right. And speaking of your close friends, you kind of have a co-star on the channel, and I think everybody knows this dog. So what can you tell us about Marley?
Marley was actually my girlfriend Lindsay's dog. And when Lindsay and I met, Marley was, I think, like 2 years old. And she was terrible. She was, not very well behaved. She wouldn't listen. You'd let her out of the car and she would just book it. She'd take off.
Right.
And Lindsay got really frustrated. And so she ended up asking me, if I would take her for a couple days on one of my camping trips. And so I took her with me. We went out to the desert and camped for a couple days. And I couldn't have her off the leash because she would just take off. Well, I decided we're out in the desert. I said, I'm going to let her off the leash. If she takes off, she takes off. And so I let her off the leash, and she ended up being pretty good. And, once she learned that what I was shooting at, was, rabbits and squirrels, she got a little excited. And hunting just kind of became natural to her. And I think what it was is she just didn't have a job.
Right.
And so once she had a job, which was going to, recover what it was that I was hunting, she became much more responsive. She'd listen better. She'd calm down. And I really didn't have to teach her a whole lot. And she came back from that trip a totally different dog.
Right.
And so we've been hunting together for about 6 years now.
That's so cool.
And she's fantastic. She's a great little dog.
Yeah, it's funny to see. What kind of dog is Marley? Do you know? Is she a mix or?
Is a Dachshund, and she's got Lab in her. And so her breed is they used for hunting badgers.
Oh, wow.
They'd actually go down into the badger hole and drag them out. And so she's
That's crick.
really strong, but she's bigger. She's a little bit bigger because she's got a lab in her. And so she loves to swim and she loves to retrieve things.
That is awesome.
So for a hunting dog, she's perfect. And she's great for me because I've had bigger dogs. And anybody that's had a big dog knows they're not easy to travel with. And so she goes everywhere with me. She travels with me. She's small. She'll fit in a tent without taking up much space. And she's very strong. I mean, she has no problem, on some of those longer hikes that we go on. And she's just a great dog.
That's really cool. I've been considering a hunting partner myself, just because I've been out in the field sometimes literally all by myself, and I'm like, you know, this is really a really cool experience, but it almost feels more natural to have something there, like a little dog would be good or something. But I don't know, because I don't have any friends that typically go with me, and it feels weird to be alone in the forest. So maybe a dog is something I should look at.
Well, Terry, you know, offhand, Air Gunner, the guy that I hunt with a lot, you guys may have seen his channel. He's been on mine a lot. That's Terry's, that's Marley's husband.
Oh, great.
She absolutely loves him. I mean, they're almost inseparable when, you know, we're out hunting. You know, when he's there, Marley is his dog.
Right. That's awesome. So does Marley, do you kind of take more of responsibility for Marley than Lindsay now, or?
Yeah. Lindsay has, I think he's like 10 years old. He's a pit bull. And he's old. So, you know, before Lindsay and I would do a lot of camping together. And now that she has Buddy, who she'd picked up a couple years ago as a rescue, he's very difficult to travel with. And so she ends up either staying home with him, or we use our RV and we go camp in that. Because it's not easy for us to all, you know, do the tent camping thing.
Right.
He's like 110 pounds, so he takes up a lot of space.
Oh, that's a big dog. Man. So when it comes to camping and kind of getting everything out, like all your gear packed and ready to go out, like what's your ideal setup to go out and record and hopefully have a successful hunt where you end up with some game?
Well, I usually have found the more remote places are usually the best for filming and usually has the best, you know, success rate as far as being able to hunt stuff. And the only reason I say that is because I've gone to, you know, your typical campgrounds and camped. And when there's a lot of people around, you know, it's not always the best situation for trying to film.
Right.
And, you know, I try to stay pretty discreet, you know, as far as using guns and that sort of thing. And so I usually find places that are pretty remote. I have a few private properties that I'm able to visit frequently and camp on. And so that's helped a lot. But generally, I like to obviously be close to my vehicle because I carry a lot of things. You know, I've got to carry a lot of camera gear, a lot of battery stuff, you know, for charging my cameras. And so it's not easy to, you know, just hike away and be gone.
Right. So when you're kind of finding your spot to set up, I mean, it probably depends on what you're after, but what are you typically looking for? Like, do you look for like bushes and trees or like natural coverage, or just an open spot?
Out here in California, you know, we don't have much of a winter. And so the places that I look for are places that I've usually gone to before and I'm familiar. You know, I may go out ahead of time, you know, a couple days before or a couple weeks, and I'll kind of scout for these areas and I'll keep in mind hey, this might be a good place for me to come back and film. You know, it might look good on camera. I'll look for signs of animal activity. And a lot of times, you know, I'll go back and I'll set up and, you know, I'll have a few days where I won't see anything at all.
Right.
And so it's not easy. I mean, it's hunting. There's no guarantees. But obviously,
Right, right.
when you're out and you're going to make a video, you know, you kind of want to have a target-rich environment. And it's not always easy. It doesn't always work out that way.
This is very true, yeah. So what is your favorite game to go after? I mean, do you have a favorite?
I'd say jackrabbits. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, you know, here in California, they're not easy to hunt
Right.
at all. And I've done big game hunting in the past, and I would say it's close to, you know, hunting deer. I mean, in a lot of ways, you're having to do a lot of hiking in most cases, and a lot of the shots are, you know, pretty far. You know, even for a firearm, a lot of the shots are pretty far. And so for me, it's pretty challenging.
Yeah, I've had a couple opportunities myself to go after some jackrabbits, and they are just tough animals, man. They're like, I don't know, they're like little tanks, and they can hear so well, so they hear you from a mile away, and then they start taking off. I remember the first time I actually saw one at a distance, I was like, is that someone's dog running away? Because I'd never seen one in comparison to like a cottontail. So I didn't realize how big they are.
You know, a lot of people I've talked to, a lot of hunters, and a lot of people in general that spend a lot of time in the deserts have never even seen one.
They're kind of elusive.
You know, I have a friend of mine that I used to hunt with a lot, and he didn't believe me when I told him, you know, how big they can get until he actually saw one, and he was shocked.
Yeah, they're alarmingly big. I mean, 'cause you just think of this, you think of a rabbit and you're like, it's not very big, but it's almost like a deer versus a
I
moose
call
kind of.
kangaroos. I mean, they're, you know,
Seriously.
I've seen some big ones out in the Sonoran Desert in Arizona. And you know, they really are. They're like a small dog.
It's crazy. Yeah, I never imagined how big they actually were. Then I saw one, and then I tried hunting them, and they're tough, dude. Like even headshots on them sometimes are like, it still has some gas in it and it runs off a bit. You know, and I'm what's been your kind of experience, or what do you like so much about going after jackrabbits?
Well, the areas that I hunt them are kind of an unlikely place that you would normally find them. And the reason I say that is when you think of jackrabbits, you think, you know, desert. And where I hunt them is actually more of alpine level. And so, in a lot of cases, they get bigger and they're a lot more difficult to hunt because you're not hunting them on flat ground. They're up in, you know, the woods. They're in amongst trees, thick sagebrush. And it's a whole different way of hunting them. And you hunt them enough, you get to kind of learn their habitat. You get to learn, they're creatures of habit. And usually, if you see one there today, they're going to be in the same place tomorrow. And so I've gotten pretty familiar with how to find them and where they are, and they're actually very fascinating animals.
Yeah, my favorite game to go after still to this day, specifically with air guns, is cottontails. Like that's where it all started for me, was with hunting rabbits, and I was like, I'm sure I'll get over this once I keep getting into the sport or whatever, but it still is like one of the most fun things to me because it is such a challenge. They like hunker down right in front of you, and you don't even see them until you're 3 feet away, and then they just bolt off, and you try and find them, and you can't. So I haven't done a lot of jackrabbit hunting myself, but I imagine they're pretty similar. They're kind of hunkered down,
Yeah, and
and you just walk up on them, and then they're gone.
quail are a great, bird to use, with an air gun. And the meat is so good. So, if anybody's interested in hunting birds, I'd say, try quail. A lot of fun to hunt, very challenging with an air gun. And some of the best meat that you can get.
So what's your typical go-to rifle when if you're just going to go into the field, you're not filming a review for anything, what's your go-to gun?
Recently I got the opportunity to shoot the new Day-State Revere, which is a huntsman essentially with the new side lever. And I decided to use it in 177 caliber. And the reason I'd chosen that was because it'd been a long time since I'd used a 177. Usually it's a 22 or a 30 caliber or a 25. And I really enjoyed it. I was surprised at how well, I was able to shoot out, 60, 70 yards with a 177. A great shot count, smaller caliber. And I found, it was more than adequate, for rabbits and just a, fantastic shooting gun. Lately, I've been using the LCS Airarms, the SK-19, and I've got that one in 25 caliber. I've been shooting that a lot, and I love that gun. I reviewed it, and I liked it so much that I ended up picking up one for my own. And for me, that's just a fantastic gun. I mean, for the kind of hunting that I do. It's semi-automatic, and I can get out to, a couple hundred yards with it.
That's
And
crazy.
so I've really enjoyed it. That's, and then I've got, bigger stuff that, I can get out to, 300 yards. But, stuff like that, it uses more air. You got to be a little careful with how far away from camp you're going, because you're going to have to either carry a bottle with you. And so these are all things that, you kind of have to factor in, if you're going to be out doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point as well, 'cause I've been out in the field. Like even if I'm just on like high power with my gun, I know it's eating up air a lot faster, and I end up going through shots quicker than I hoped, and then I'm like, Dang it, I have to hike back to the truck to get
But a
the
lot
tank
of
going.
times you don't need to worry about shot count so much, at least for me. If you're, on a dairy and you're hunting pigeons or pest birds, you may be concerned with shot count because you're going to be taking, maybe hundreds of shots in a day.
Right.
A lot of the places that I go, I might not take one shot, over 3 days.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a more accurate depiction of like a hunting scenario, not a pest control. Yeah.
In a lot of cases, if you're hunting for food, you don't need to worry about shot count. You need to worry about, a gun that's accurate, has enough power to get out to where you want to be shooting. And, so I kind of look at it that way.
Yeah, that's true. I think sometimes we think too much or we give too much weight in our decision towards like magazine capacity or shot count
Right.
because we're thinking of like the most extreme scenarios, when in reality, the one that we're going to be typically using it in most is like your gun's going to be just fine if you get 20 shots per fill. Like,
Well, that's why I had no problem with using a hand pump for so many years because, I'd fill the gun. It might take me a while to fill it with the hand pump, but, a full, if I get 25, 30 shots with it, that might last me a couple days.
Right. Yeah. And with just going back to the SK19, it obviously has the full auto capabilities. Do you ever use that in a hunting scenario?
No. No. No, I mean it's to me, I think it's just a novelty.
Right.
It's one of those things, you could take out with somebody that's maybe never shot an air gun before and put some tin cans out and, say, here, let it rip. And it puts a big smile on their face. But as far as using something like that, for a hunting situation, I see no reason for it.
Right. And with the semi-auto though, is that a more field appropriate feature
Oh,
to have?
it's fantastic. I mean, to give you an idea, a lot of times, I shoot jackrabbits when they're running. And, I've used a lot of guns that way. I'll shoot at stuff while it's moving. And I've practiced it a lot. And you get kind of familiar with how much you got to lead ahead. But with something that's semi-automatic, I mean, it makes it a whole lot easier.
Right. Do you think that's going to be a feature in the airgun industry that starts to become more popular? I mean, we're already seeing it with
Absolutely, yeah.
a few guns and
Absolutely.
the now the semi-auto Marauder is
I think
hitting the market, so.
a big factor for the future. And I think a lot of people are going to be turned off by it. As a user myself, I can say, having that feature, you're going to waste a lot of shots just, from the fun factor of it.
Right.
So expect to, spend more money on ammo, and that's just the nature of the beast.
Right. It's kind of like having a fast car. You're going to go through a lot of gas.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, what would be, of all the features on the SK19, what would be one that you would improve or change? What would you want to see different on that gun?
There's a lot of people that complain about the magazine not being able to come out. And to me, that really isn't a factor. And from somebody that's had a little experience in manufacturing, I can say it probably wouldn't be something you would want, for accuracy reasons. You know, it would not be something that would probably work well. And, you know, a lot of people have complained about the trigger, you know, being too long of a first stage. And that's just kind of another nature of design that I think will eventually be improved. And the bottom rail, you know, is kind of flexy, and that's one thing that I wish they would change, and I'm sure they will.
Yeah, I do remember you saying that in your review on it about the bottom rail. So you had to mount your bipod towards the back of the rail because it's only held in by like one screw or something on there, but.
Yeah, and you know, I have a feeling, you know, a lot of things like that are kind of, you know, they just kind of get through. You know, they'll build a product and it may not have really been tested by somebody that gets out and really uses stuff. And, you know, it's normal. That happens with a lot of guns, you know, in their first generation, and usually stuff like that, you know, becomes better.
And so for me, whenever I see a new gun come out, I'm always hesitant to purchase it because I want to see what improvements are going to come out with like a Gen 2 version.
Yes.
And I actually, with my very first PCP and just getting into it, that wasn't something that I even knew about or considered. So I got the Storm Rider, and then the Gen 2 came out with some improved features, but then it had a recall. So it was kind of like good thing I didn't get the Gen 2. But is that something that you would recommend to people, or is that it's just like a,
You know, it's
you know,
either
whatever.
this with a lot of guns. I mean, and to be honest, a lot of them are hyped. I mean, you know, they'll come out with a new product and, you know, everybody wants the latest and greatest things. And so you're going to see all the best reviewers come out with reviews at the same time. And a lot of them are going to collaborate with the manufacturer. And of course, it's going to be the best thing ever. And then people start getting them in their hands, and you start reading on the forums, you know, oh, it's got this problem, or, you know, this broke, or this leaks. And the next thing you know, it's not anything like what you thought it was going to be. And so that's just kind of how it works. I mean, you know, I've had experiences myself where I've bought things and not been as excited about it once I've gotten it. And usually it's something, you know, simple like a magazine, you know, being plastic, or maybe just the metal finish wasn't all I'd hoped it would be, you know, stuff like that.
And then when you do see kind of things on the forums, like since you've got a background in manufacturing some pretty ridiculous air guns, do you think a lot of it is just nitpicking? Like people are just being trolls and being like, "Well, this gun leaks and don't ever buy this brand."
PCPs, you know, a lot of the higher end guns, you know, a lot of them have higher end problems. I mean, you know, it's like a sports car. I mean, along with that, you know, might come a little bit more maintenance. It might be something that you use from a bench. It might not be something that you want thrown in the back of a Jeep and, you know, rattled around and taken down a bumpy road. I see a really big difference in there's guns, you know, there's a lot of entry level guns now. And what I see is people going out and they spend, you know, $300, $400 on an entry. I shouldn't say an entry level gun, but that's kind of the correct term. A lower end gun. And it's almost like they're upset when the guns don't perform like a $2,000 gun. It's almost like people just look at air guns in general and they think they should all kind of perform the
Right.
same. And they, you know, that's just not the case. I mean, you've got a $300, $400 PCP, which in reality probably was manufactured for around, you know, 60, 80 bucks.
Right.
And so you got to look at it kind of that way. I mean, and a lot of these guns, you know, they're marked up considerably. And a lot of times it's just because you're buying a brand.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, it's the best of quality. It just means that you may be buying a brand. And it can go the other direction too. You know, you may spend $2,000 on an air gun, and it really isn't that much better than, you know, a $300, $400 gun. I see this a lot, and it can get frustrating.
Right. And as far as kind of seeing that, do you think that's something that will get better, or do you think that's like a money motivation thing, and or is it just that's kind of just part of the process, like that's how this thing works? We mark guns up. Or
Well, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, Day-State, you know, they're coming out with the new Delta Wolf, and it's a very advanced gun. I mean, it's unlike anything the industry has ever seen. And it's very expensive.
right.
Well, the thing about Day-State is if they need better quality bolts, if they need a nicer stock, they just charge more for the gun. And, you know, the price is kind of reflected by that. You know, other companies I've noticed, you know, if they need something better, you know, they'll it might not be. It might not be. They might just, you know, add a different stock on, or you know, they'll add something better, but they'll take away from something else so they can keep the price point. And so I've noticed that, you know, you see a lot of, you know, they may be a little chintzy on how they do the finish, and then they'll put a nice stock on it, or they'll put a cheap stock on it, and they'll do a really good job on the
Right.
finish. Or they'll put, you know, a cheap regulator in it, as opposed to, you know, something like a Huma or more of a better brand or a more reputable brand, I should say.
And then do you think that's something to like raise a stink about as a consumer, or do you think, I mean, maybe this is an individual answer, but
I think it's definitely something, you know, I'm very picky, and the only reason I'm picky is because I've had my hands on really, really expensive guns, and I've had my hands on very, very inexpensive. And so I've kind of experienced both.
right.
And yeah, I mean, if I'm gonna go out and spend 2 grand on an air gun, I'm gonna be picky.
That makes sense.
And the thing I found about most of the higher end guns is, you know what, they all shoot really well. I found most of them are all pretty close in accuracy. And they kind of have to be because there's so many out there. I mean, all these major brands are competing amongst each other, and so they, I think, all became really close in accuracy the past, 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And so I found myself looking for other aspects beyond the accuracy, such as the quality of the stocks, the finish, the durability, the magazines, things like that.
Right. And what do you think is a really underrated feature on a gun that ultimately is a really important thing, but oftentimes gets overlooked?
I think the side lever. If a gun has a side lever, the cocking links is usually a good indication to kind of show quality of a product, at least in air guns. That's one of the first things I look for. How strong is it? What does the finish look like? Is it smooth? Just cocking a gun, I can feel the internal parts. I mean, you can feel if it's, gritty. I can feel if it's been machined correctly. And just the overall finish of it.
Are you a Woodstock kind of guy or?
I am.
Okay.
I am. I love, that look. But then again, there's a place for tactical.
And do you think there's an advantage to having a certain stock style over another, like, a synthetic stock, if you're going to be like bumping it around in a field.
I've had people, say, "Oh, I would never take that stock out in the field." And that's just not been my experience. For instance, I have a 30 caliber Day State Safari that AOA sent me, and I fell in love with the gun because Claudio came over from Chile and had brought it with him, and I just fell in love with the gun and wanted to review it, and so AOA sent me one. And I gotta say, that gun has just hauled up to almost everything I've thrown at it. I mean, I've left it out in snow. I've left it out in rain. I've taken it in the desert. It's been abused. And I gotta say, that thing has held up better than, a lot of synthetic stocks that I've had.
Right. And that, yeah, and that's what kind of wood is on that? Because I know it's a darker wood.
It's walnut, and the Safari model, has a different stock on it. And it's kind of hard to explain. It's kind of like, it almost looks like a barn wood as far as the texture. And it's a special way that they do it. They won't disclose exactly how, but I think it's like a real thick, like, wire brush that they use. And it's just got a very unique look and texture to it.
Right. So what is your favorite looking gun? Like which gun do you think just looks amazing?
I gotta say, I've got that American Air Arms Evil, and that was a stock that was built by this guy named Michael McEwen that owns airgunstocks.com, and he custom made that stock for me. It's black walnut, and it's just a beautiful rifle. I mean, it It's just unbelievable. People that see it, they're like, oh my God, that's like the nicest stock I've ever seen.
Do you have pictures of it on your Instagram or videos of it on YouTube?
Do. I've got it on my Instagram. And you guys may have seen the gun in a few videos. I don't show it that often anymore. And the only reason for that is because it's not available. And every time I post something or make a video, people get mad because they can't buy it.
Right. That's kind of funny, though. You have some very unique videos if you do that. Extra unique.
But, I like just the look of wood. I like the old classic feel of it.
Well, Dana, before we kind of close this thing or bring it to an end for this episode, what do you think is going to be big in the future for air guns as far as the technology? We kind of already touched on like semi-auto. Do you think that's going to be moving into the industry more than it already has? But what do
Definitely.
you think is next? Do you have any predictions?
I think you're gonna see a lot more guns be shooting slugs. I think that's gonna be a huge thing because it already is what a lot of people are looking for when they're gonna buy something. They want
Right.
something that shoots slugs. And essentially, the market is in a place right now with almost a lot of manufacturers where they're trying to take existing pellet guns and they're trying to make them shoot slugs.
Right.
That's kind of the reality of it. And a lot of these guns, they're pellet guns, and they really just don't have the power to push slugs. And so I think you're gonna be seeing a lot of manufacturers come out with specific rifles that have been designed from the ground up to shoot slugs.
And do you think there's going to be a wide variety of calibers that are going to be more available for slugs? I mean, obviously, the heavier the slug and
Think a lot of manufacturers are in the mode of going bigger, but I don't necessarily think that's the best route. People, need to be aware, along with, shooting slugs, you're dealing with, some large calibers. I mean, these guys that are out shooting birds, at dairies with slugs. I don't think it's necessary to be using, such heavy calibers.
right.
I think, a smaller caliber is perfectly acceptable, using slugs. For myself, I prefer keeping the caliber small.
Right. And what do you think the advantage is to that, to keeping it smaller?
It's a lot safer to use in certain environments, especially around farms. And I think there needs to be a little more discussion on safety.
Right.
A pellet may, go through a bird and, land a couple hundred feet past. You got a slug, you still got, a danger zone, 100 plus yards beyond.
Right.
So, I'd like to see some more awareness to being careful with, shooting them.
Right. Yeah, I've wondered that too, 'cause I mean, I think there's a an idea that because it's an air gun that it's not even within the air gun community that they understand the power and the potential of it to a degree, but I don't think they understand the overpower of firearms and how little energy truly is needed to like seriously harm someone or kill them. So I've definitely wondered that myself with kind of the seeing some people shoot slugs and stuff. And again, all I can see is the what's in the scope. I don't know what's beyond or anything like that. So
And
I only
so
have that perspective, but
it's important to be aware of these things, and I think there's little talk about it. And so I'd really like to see that discussed more. I think, a lot of people have different opinions of that, but I think the reality is it needs to be discussed, and people need to be aware, and people need to understand that you don't need to use slugs. You don't need to. They work very well, past 100 yards. If you're going to be doing long range stuff, they're fantastic. But if you're doing backyard stuff or closer range pest control, you don't need to be using them. It's not really necessary.
I think that's a one of the things we see is the big names on YouTube and stuff like that using slugs. So then, of course,
And
it shoots the popularity of them up.
you see bigger calibers, You don't need 30 caliber, to kill pigeons. And I like using, the 177, and it's worked very well. It ranges, 60, 70 yards, and that works really well for a lot of the farms that I go on. And it's safe, and I don't have to worry as much about that my backstops, and I just feel a lot more safe using that, less liability.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I think, like you're saying, that it is something that requires more conversation and discussion is just like all it takes is one bad shot for things to kind of go south, for the direction of air guns or someone's specific situation, a bad shot and you hit a cow at a dairy or
And
whatever.
so I've always, tried to be really careful when I'm around farm animals, and if I'm shooting up in the air or anything, at an angle like that, it is important to really know what's behind there.
So for the future of air gunning, we're going to see more slugs and hopefully more education around slugs and maybe some, I don't know, some courses on air gun safety.
I think it just, like I said, it needs to be talked about more, and I think people just need to be aware. And for the most part, I think people are safe. I think with these guns, I think, they're making more power, and there just needs to be a little more thought about that when, we're out hunting. We just need to be a little more aware.
Well, Dana, before we close this one out, one last question, and that is if you could give a beginner a quick tip or bit of advice for getting into hunting and kind of filming their hunts and doing a similar thing they see their favorite channels doing on YouTube, since you're the one of the guys who has done it and done it very well, what would you say to someone wanting to get into doing that kind of thing?
Don't get into it to make money, because you're going to be disappointed. Ask questions. Don't be afraid to try something new. You need to kind of find what it is that you're good at. I mean, if you're good at target shooting, make videos about target shooting. If for myself, I don't want to say I'm good at camping, but that's what I enjoy to do, and so that's kind of where I focus my videos.
That's
You
really
know,
good.
do what you enjoy doing.
Well, that's great advice, and I've been trying to follow that myself, and I've already seen people who don't like it, but we gotta keep going, gotta keep
Yeah,
moving.
you gotta expect, you really have to expect people to hate on you. I mean, you're not gonna please everybody.
Right. Very true. And you will learn that very quickly in really any industry or job or business or whatever. It's just the nature of people. But they know where can people be following along with you? And are there any sponsors or people you want to give shout outs to, friends,
Well,
family?
my primary sponsors are Airguns of Arizona, Tacticam. They've helped me out a lot. I've got a lot of help from the community. A lot of people have donated, to our channel. You can visit mountainsportairguns.com, our website. We usually have updates on Instagram. Things that we're working on, projects, and we of course got our YouTube channel, which, I always enjoy the comments. I love meeting people, talking to people, answering questions, and I'm pretty active on Facebook. But usually the best way, to get in touch with me personally is through Instagram.
Right on. And any final thoughts or anything you want to leave us with? Any words of wisdom?
No, man, I really appreciate you, having me on the show. Really appreciate, your interest in the sport, and I appreciate everything that you've done.
Oh, thanks, dude. That means a lot to me to hear it from someone who's done it and been in it and done it well, too.
Think the podcast is a great thing. That's awesome people, that are at work and might not be able to watch YouTube or able to listen to some things, or people that can't get out of their house now. That's an awesome thing to be able to listen to the podcast and get entertainment that way.
Yeah, sure thing, dude. You have a good night and tell the family I said,
I
hey,
will.
I don't know if Marley know we'll get it, but you can tell her. Hey everybody, thanks for checking out this episode. If you liked what you just heard on the Airgun Podcast, if you would consider sharing the Airgun Podcast on social media, as well as subscribing to the podcast, that really helps me and in the end helps you because you get more stuff, better content, and I can keep this thing cranking. There's also an option for you to support the podcast financially if you feel led to do so and you feel that I have earned that in your book. And you can do that for as little as 99 cents a month. It doesn't have to be a freaking child support check or anything like that. But I will accept those as well if you want. Anyway, thanks so much for checking this out. I appreciate the support. I appreciate the listen. I hope you guys have an incredible 2021. And let's keep this thing rolling. God bless.